All right, good morning. I will call us to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, February 24th, and ask if the audience would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning, and thank you for being here. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to agency reports, and we've got Ames Community Preschool Annual Report. Sue, hi, Sue. How are you today?
I'm all right. Does it matter which one of these?
As long as it's on, we're good.
All right. It says on.
Perfect. All
righty, there you go. All right. Thanks again for having us here. And I never know how long you all want us to talk, so we'll just talk a little bit. Just a recap, ACPC has 300-some children, before and after school kids at all the elementary schools in Ames. And then our new center at 920 Carroll, which was the former Wilson Beardshire building. So we're just providing child care services. Not just, but providing child care services. So I thought I'd talk about three things. One is how we use the asset funds. Two, the state of our finances, including our capital campaign. And three, what we're working on right now. ACPC gets $132,000 from asset, which is a lot of money. The county portion of that is $13,921. We use all of those funds to subsidize our sliding fee scale. And currently, 25% of our families are on the fee scale, and they pay that reduced rate. Our families are this whole spectrum of the community. We have students' kids, but we also have moms that work in nursing homes or bank tellers or entry-level positions at places. A newer thing is we have several families where the grandparents are the guardians of the kids. More of those families than what maybe we had seen in the past. The reductions for the fee scale vary from 50 off a month to 300 off a month. So 300 times 12 months, you can use up $100,000 very quickly. Mm-hmm. If you do the math of that. The Story County priorities of safety, health, and well-being of children and prevention and early intervention services fit well with our child care services, we think. So, our capital campaign, switching subjects, we have raised $159,000 for the renovation of the building where we are, primarily building a commercial kitchen. That took the bulk of it, and adding bathrooms, and that took even more of it. So we have 80, 90 individual donors, and then we have large donors, the Story County Community Foundation, mm-hmm. United Way of Story County. They gave us large donations. We are currently in the process of trying to figure out the heating and cooling system of the building, and we made it through last winter, but we're having some issues this winter. We're letting bids for boilers as we speak. Fortunately, we still have the sale of the properties. We owned the three properties on 6th mm-hmm. Street across from the Ames City Hall. We sold those, holding on to that money, knowing that the boilers and the whole pneumatic system were coming, and they are here. So we're doing the boilers right now, which is probably a good $80,000 worth of boilers for that building. But they're also studying some other aspects of things. So it's a to-do list, but we are very much enjoying having our own building and being on one level and being accessible to a broader group of people. We also are able to serve more kids there, and so that's a good thing as well. The third thing is, what are we working on right now? Now that we've managed to live through our first year, and I have learned more about being a building owner than what I thought I needed to know. But now we're doing more of the fun stuff, if you can call revising your strategic plan fun. But it is fun to look at, okay, now we're here, and we lived through the first year. Now what are we going to do? And so we're working on that. That includes we had wanted to have a garden, community garden. We're working on that. We're working on actual curriculum activities with the children and instituting creative curriculum and things like that, that other groups are doing. So we are now to those points. So we're looking forward to a good next year. So do you have any questions for me?
I don't have any questions. I just would like to say how vital, Sue, I think what you guys provide the community is. I think that too often we as a society miss the importance of what happens to our children before they start kindergarten. And we're so appreciative of what you do.
Thank you. Well, and I am happy that the world is becoming more aware of the importance of those birth to 3 years, and we're working with various groups on promoting more activities for the kids.
Yeah, well, we've got to set the right foundation.
You got it.
Thank you so much for your work in that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Departmental reports, our friend Shirley Faircloth. Hi, Shirley.
Hello. Good morning. First thing I want to do is thank you for your continued support, not only for juvenile court services, but for the programs that are community-based. That certainly does reduce the number of referrals to juvenile court and provides that early intervention. So I appreciate all you do for the citizens of Story County. Regarding our budget report, and I know you have a long agenda today, so I've kind of streamlined my report looking over that. For the county budget, we are within expenditures with all the items. We have re-estimated and actually reduced budget amounts in the following categories: vehicle fuels and maintenance, personnel items, and protective living. Of those three areas, protective living is the state-mandated cost, so if we would go over what we've estimated, the board would and the county would be responsible for that, but I'll continue to keep you monitored on that expense. We also are continuing to look at ways to streamline or improve the budget. A couple of things we are doing is working with Carla Webb, the intake coordinator and fiscal manager of Story County Community Services, to determine the feasibility of sharing the county vehicle and possibly reducing the number of vehicles that you need in your county fleet. And the second thing, Deb Shildroth and I are looking at county funding that is going to various different streams to see if there's any overlap and we can maybe reduce or look at how we can streamline that process, whether that's putting the money through asset or a different vehicle. I don't have any specific recommendations for you today, but Deb and I will continue to meet and bring a specific recommendation back to the board.
Mm-hmm.
One item that I do need to follow up with Lisa Markley on is the clarification of the count number. Traditionally, we had the money for the Iowa Juvenile Home. The board had approved that to be used for repairs and security improvements at Rosedale, and I'm not sure if we should use that same account number, so I'll get that clarified.
Okay.
We do have a pending claim in the amount of $1,508, but I will get that clarified, and we'll make sure that gets reported.
And that was $30,000, right?
$30,000 total. Regarding our clients at Rosedale, we continue to look at the census as we do see out-of-county residents. We are meeting on a monthly basis with Department of Human Services and Rosedale staff to monitor that. I staff cases with Department of Human Services on a monthly basis, looking at any individuals that are placed outside of the county. Typically tends to be either Rosedale was full or the clients are under the age of 10, which Rosedale, that's the bottom age that they serve.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that we're doing is working with all local law enforcement agencies to talk about the child welfare emergency services, and that is the ability to place children for up to 23 hours without having that overnight. It may be an overnight stay, but without having court intervention. And I did have a typo on your report. On the bottom of page one, I put community welfare emergency service instead of child welfare emergency service. So please note that on your report. Regarding the state budget, there's a lot of activity going on at this point. In your packets, I have included the juvenile court chief's recommendation to the Health and Human Services Appropriation Committee. They reported on February 17th and had primarily four specific recommendations. The first was maintaining current level of funding where it's at, given certainly some of the state constraints with the budget. The second is expanding work with clients who reached their 18th birthday while they're under the supervision of juvenile court services. This would be a voluntary basis and would be able to allow juvenile court staff to help transition those students and clients to the adult system. They may be lacking family support or they just may need some additional support in order to help make that transition successful. The third is the need for the state training school for girls. Department of Human Services does not support a state training school for girls, and their handout that they submitted to the Health and Human Services Appropriation is included in your packet. Juvenile court certainly does support state training school for girls. Iowa no longer has a secure setting for treatment of the most serious juvenile female offenders. The average length of stay for girls in detention has increased by 24%, and this is a direct county expense. Girls stay longer in detention because of the lack of adequate placement options. If ordered to the state training school, the only option for girls at this point in time is an out-of-state placement, and we're currently using a facility in Wisconsin. Obviously, this is difficult then for those individuals to stay connected to their family, even communication with juvenile court services, and obviously community services upon their return. The other impact that it has is educational requirements are different from state to state, so then it's difficult to ensure that those girls are obtaining their high school education. And again, length and stay in detention, which comes back to the county. The other consequence that we've seen from the loss of the juvenile home is an increase in waivers. So juveniles that have been referred to district court for those charges to be handled. Juvenile court services has tracked the number of girls that would be eligible for the state training school since January of 2014 when the Iowa juvenile home was closed. And there, 15 of those girls have been waived to adult system or closed unsuccessfully. Eight have been placed out of state. Five were aged out without adequate treatment. So there's been a total of 22 girls that could have currently been treated if Iowa would have a girls' state training school. The Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments tonight at 7 o'clock. That's the pending lawsuit, so that is available. It is open to the public. It also would be available live. It's going to be live streamed, so if that's something that you want to watch, you can get that connection on the judicial branch website.
So, Shirley, just so to make sure I understand the numbers, so you're telling me there are 28 girls that would have qualified for the state home?
22 girls.
Okay, tell me the numbers again.
Okay, 22 girls total.
Okay.
15 were waived to the adult system or closed unsuccessful.
Right.
Eight out of state and five aged out.
Okay. So that doesn't add up to 22.
That doesn't add up. I'll have to double check my
figures.
Sorry.
Yeah,
right, as I'm going back through that.
And like, so how does that, anecdotally, how would that compare to previous years? I mean, is that in the 20s number about what you would see on an annual basis?
I'll have to go
basis?
Back and I can find that out. I don't have that with me today.
I would be curious of, and this can be as simple as an email that we can put as an addendum to your report. I would be curious what 2013 and 2012 looked like in terms of numbers when the home was still open. And at that point, what happened to those? Did all of them just go to the home, or did some of them, I would imagine that some of them got waived into being tried as an adult I would imagine that some of them still went out of state. I would, you know, some of them clearly are going to age out as they're going through the process. I'd just be curious what the numbers look like so that I can ascertain what kind of impact it's having not having the home there. Because out of these, clearly a lot of them would have gone to the home. Now that's not a possibility, and I just want to understand what it really looks
okay.
like.
Okay, and I'm not sure I can get you those figures. The
okay.
reason being, I can get you the number of girls that were placed at the juvenile home.
Okay.
I can get you the number of girls that were waived to district court.
Okay.
What I'm not sure that we have access is how to track who qualified, because they would need to have prior placements, have a level of offense that would qualify them to be eligible for the juvenile home,
okay.
and I'm not sure I can pull that
That's
information.
Fine. And don't spend a lot of time on this. I'm just curious, comparing apples to apples,
yep.
what it looks like, yep. as much as we can,
okay.
without a
I
whole
can get
lot
you
of
those,
time.
I know I can get you those two areas.
Okay. Good. And I wanted to say I appreciate you dealing with community services on the vehicle. It's something we had talked about as part of the budget, is seeing if it was possible to consolidate down after you brought to our attention that vehicle that you guys currently have. And give us a real quick DCAT. I missed the last DCAT meeting. We've got the new coordinator. Just
okay.
give us a quick DCAT update.
Our new coordinator is Natalie Hashimi Toragi, and she would be with us for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So she came to us from actually Ames Middle School. She was the Ames Middle School liaison. So we miss her in that position, but are excited to have her on board. She is doing a super job to start with. In your packets, I have given you some additional information on DCAT areas throughout the state, and then in addition to Story County programs. So, again, the programs that we oversee in Story County are the DCAT CPPC coordinator, asset coordination, there's money given towards that, individual services that's used on gas, clothing, could be diapers, formula that a family needs, and for both Department of Human Services and Juvenile Court Services clients, family team meetings, school-based mental health. That's a program that's been going for 3 months, I believe, and we've seen a big increase in services there that was really a gap in services for the community. So that's been a wonderful program. And then a recent program is credit recovery programs and school support. So those awards were just started, and I think we should be seeing reports here in the next month on numbers that they're serving in Story County. In your packet, just other DCAT programs that the district funds in our 22-county area that Story County sees benefit from is the Girls Weekend Program, the Boys Weekend Program, the Restitution Program, and Functional Family Therapy. So if you do have any questions after you have a chance to review those, please give me a holler and I can go into further detail. Rick is a part of the DCAT board, and we really appreciate having your support and expertise on the board.
Absolutely. Paul, any questions?
No.
Shirley, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Next is consideration of minutes. These are the February 17th minutes.
Move approval.
And I'll second. Any corrections or additions? Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions. And let's pull the first one because we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So let's pull Tyler Grimm and consider the rest of the personnel actions.
Move approval as presented.
And I'll second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions with the one change. Pass. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
Second. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda. Please add utility permits 1546, 1547, 1548, and 1549.
Move approval with noted additions.
And I'll second. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. That takes us down to public hearing items. First consideration of ordinance 236.
You're not going to read all of it?
No,
I'm kidding. I know there's a lot there. So real quick, I'll just kind of going to go through each one of these. I think we have six different sections that we had up here all together that we focused in on this work program item, and I'll kind of explain what the Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended to the Board of Supervisors. First, we've been dealing with what we call accessory buildings on adjacent lots. The problem that we've been dealing with here is that, specifically in subdivisions, if one person buys two lots, they build their house on one lot, they've got that vacant lot adjacent that they, by our code, cannot put any accessory buildings on. To fix this in the past, we've made them go through an entire subdivision process to combine those two lots, which is somewhat time-consuming, money-consuming for the applicant. And we really needed to find a way to kind of make this situation work without having people go through that type of process. I've got the Bella Woods subdivision up here. Just kind of wanted to show you an example of two lots right here owned by one person. You can see this orange line that goes between there. That's actually the dividing line between the two lots. And then the black outline is the total area that they own. And then right here as well, there's currently a house on this parcel here and on this one right here, which would make this area right here under our current code not allowed to have anything built on it. But again, those property owners do own a lot of adjacent land. So what our Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended to the board was to add language to our exceptions and modifications section that states that an accessory building may be built on an adjoining lot, parcel, or tract if the adjoining lots, parcel, or tracts are owned by the same property owner and said property owner signs a restrictive covenant agreeing not to sever the adjoining lots, parcels, or tracts without the mutual consent of the director of our department and the property owner. In doing this, and I think I included an attachment that showed what that agreement would look like, we've run that agreement past Jessica, and she's on board with it as well. It'll more or less say that you can build an accessory building on that adjacent lot as long as those two stay together. The only way there would ever be a situation that would come up where we'd agree to do away with that agreement is if we had an individual property owner proposing to build a lot or build a single-family dwelling on that lot and keep that accessory building, or if that accessory building was removed. So in doing this, I think it really achieves what we've been trying to maintain, is that we're not selling individual lots with just accessory buildings on them, but at the same time not making applicants go through a lengthy process just to make that area buildable. Any questions on that? Okay, getting into accessory dwellings then, and this is commonly referred to as granny flats. While our Code of Ordinances does not currently allow for accessory dwellings, there are currently options for such a use that's somewhat similar. First of all, we allow for temporary mobile homes in our A1 zoning district. Temporary mobile homes are allowed for an ailing family member to either live in the mobile home or to live in the principal structure, the caretaker to live in the other one. We allow that right now through a mobile home permitting process that is renewed annually. We send out those renewals just to make sure. I think currently we have two or three out in the county. We also allow for that new residential parcel subdivision in the A1 district that states if there's currently a house on place in the property, you can subdivide and build adjacent to that one another house. That really kind of helps reach that goal of getting that second house on in the area. We also wanted to point out that obviously we have 1 acre or less minimum lot sizes in our other residential districts, which allow an applicant, if they have enough acreage, to go through a subdivision process to make an additional buildable lot. Because of this, our Planning and Zoning Commission at this time is not recommending any changes. The one thing I did want to note is I think they are what I would say somewhat passionate about looking at granny flats, but they want this as an individual work program item at some point in the future. To get us more time to do research on this and see, because I think the concern is with the baby boomer generation starting to get a little bit older that these are going to start becoming a bigger issue and there's going to be more requests for these type of things coming here, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years. And our commission wants to be out in front of them and make sure that we're set up to allow for them if that's the route we want to go. But with this particular work program item, we had, again, 6 different things we were looking at, and we admittedly did not put too much research into this. Our main reasoning to the commission at the time was we just don't have much of a demand or a request for these things right now. It seems about once every 2 years we're getting somebody that asks about them. But again, and I agree with the commission, there's a good chance that those type of requests are going to pick up here in the near future. So we'll discuss that when we put our work program together for the next year.
So tell me this on the granny flats. So
We would not currently allow, if Paul decided he needed an extra building on his property, how many acres do you have? Just so I'm using my analogy. You got 9 acres. So without going through a subdivision, Paul could not build an extra little building there, the granny flat.
I mean, if it was a temporary mobile home and it fit into the...
Right, but if he wanted to build something that was going to be a granny flat and maybe down the road become a shop or a, you know, whatever he'd want, he can't do that
now. By our current
regulations. It's not considered an accessory building. What if it was attached to the house?
Yes, that's allowed. If it's in addition to the house, that's what we would consider.
Well, how does a breezeway count?
That counts it when, and I'd have to look at exactly what our definition says, but the breezeway actually counts as part of the structure. So if it's connected via breezeway, we consider that to be one big structure.
So he could do exactly, somebody who wanted to build a granny flat right now with our current regulations could do it as long as they attached it to the main structure by a breezeway.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Accessory towers, currently we do have an exception in our ordinance that states that chimneys, cooling towers, elevator bulkheads, fire towers, monuments, so on and so forth. I won't read all of them, but those may be erected to a height in excess of existing district regulations of Story County. In the few requests that we've actually had for these in the past couple months even, that's what we've kind of allowed it under. You know, we have minimum height regulations in our zoning districts, typically about 40 feet in the A1 district, and these towers for rural broadband internet mainly are much higher than 40 feet. So we've allowed for those to take place under this exception. However, at the same time, they also have to meet just our normal setback regulations, which are 2 feet on the rear property line, 10 feet on the side, and then whatever the front is. Knowing this, you're looking at a tower that sometimes can be about 100 feet tall, being that close to the property line. Obviously, if there's ever an incident where it falls, it's going to be falling onto neighboring property, could be falling on somebody's house, depending on what that house is set back at currently. We have regulations in effect right now for accessory wind turbines that are non-commercial. Mainly what our commission did is they're proposing to adopt a similar set of regulations for accessory towers that would be used for, you know, rural broadband internet. If they needed a TV tower of some sort, I know those are a little bit outdated, but there are still some out there, things like that. I think in your memo it kind of included the particular regulations, and we have it on a slide here. I'm not going to go through all those particular regulations. If there's any questions on them, though, I'd be happy to answer them. And I think this kind of touches base with the Connect Iowa initiative, too, because, again, it seems in the past 3 to 4 months that we've had a huge influx in request for towers for rural broadband internet. So we're trying to get someone ahead of these. Bed and breakfast. Currently, with our bed and breakfast regulations, we do allow for a bed and breakfast home as an accessory use for the accommodation of overnight guests permitted through a home business permit. And limited to a maximum of 2 families at any one time. Then we also have a bed and breakfast inn, and that's for pretty much anything over a bed and breakfast home. So anything over 2 families would be considered a bed and breakfast inn. That's permitted through a conditional use permit. All bed and breakfasts must be in a family home in which the host or hostess reside by our current regulations. So really the main question that came out of this was from the granny flats / accessory dwellings was, do we want to allow for an accessory dwelling on a property and further allow for the bed and breakfast operations to take place in those accessory dwellings? Simply as the commission is not recommending the allowance of accessory dwellings at this time, they further would not recommend any changes to our current bed and breakfast regulations.
Okay. But same deal applies there. You still build the breezeway and you're good to go.
Yep. Okay. Small animals, livestock, this kind of gets into the urban chicken move, I would say. Pretty much we've had a lot of requests in the past asking if, you know, in a residential district, and I'm going to use Skycrest as an example, just north of Ames because we had an incident there, but asking if they can have chickens, you know, just chickens for personal use on their property. In the past, we've said, you know, I guess it's kind of varied depending on where you're at, but in the past, we've said, first of all, look at your covenants. If your covenants allows for it, it's possibly something that might be allowed under an agricultural exemption. Depending on case-by-case scenario, sometimes that's been said differently, that we actually don't allow for them, but we're trying to get to the point where we actually have a regulation to allow for something like this. The Skycrest example, somebody did ask, And again, they eventually put the chickens on the property. The main issue we had with that one is they actually put a male rooster on the property that was waking everybody up at about 4 o'clock in the morning. So, as that doesn't work out, again, you'll see that we're looking to allow for these type of small animals in the R1, R2, and the AR zoning district. Mainly for allowing of non-commercial poultry. So we're really going to focus just on the chickens and allowing for those. We are prohibiting the male poultry. That'll take care of the noise issues. We did limit it to no more than 8 poultry, and I will say that we did work with Sue McCaskey a little bit on this particular regulation to get some feedback from her, and that number really came from her and what she thought would be appropriate for an individual residential lot. I think the rule of thumb was each chicken can produce 1 egg a day, depending on their age. Once they get a little bit older, that does slow down. But again, thinking that about 8 eggs per day would be about right for somebody. Who knows? It might need to be more than that. I don't know. But again, that was just from her. And then the poultry that shall be stored in an adequate pen of at least 5 square feet per poultry. And that came from Sue. That particular one came from Sue. And then the pen shall be set back at least 30 feet from the nearest neighboring dwelling. And then lastly, just making sure that any of these does comply with our animal control ordinance.
So right now, Charlie, we've got nothing that addresses this. If it's not in your covenants, you do what you want to do.
Exactly. And I will say, for
what
example,
do our municipalities say about this?
Yeah, I was just going to add that the city of Ames does allow for them. They don't; they're silent as well in their zoning ordinance about what they do. They do allow for them. They're covered under nuisance laws. So if you know they do become loud, the smells become too extreme or anything like that, it's covered under their nuisance law. And I think their animal control department takes care of that.
Okay. I struggle with this one, Paul.
We're an agricultural
county. And in my mind, so we've got some of these subdivisions going in my mind, it should be addressed in the covenants of the subdivision. And if it's not, it's just part of the county.
Right.
So I'm struggling.
Well, I would think that if it becomes a problem in a subdivision, then they would add. I mean, there would have to be something through the homeowners association that would deal with it, I would think. Unless, you know, I don't know, Skycrest, if they have a homeowners association.
I'm not sure on, I mean, they have common ground, I believe, in that subdivision that's held under the homeowners association, but I'm not sure how active the homeowners association is.
Well, now, and we have a mechanism right now to deal with that nuisance animal, that rooster that's crowing at 4 a.m. or atrocious smells or things like that.
I guess the only thing that I would question would be the number of chickens. I mean, if there's no regulation saying one way or the other, and you have a neighbor that's got, you know, 25 or 30 chickens in their backyard, and a smell, but.
And I will say that most of our covenants, our modern-day covenants, I should say, definitely cover this. I can't recall a time I've seen one bit of covenants that does not cover livestock of some way, shape, or form. So there would be a lot of control there. Again, this is just something for us to use when people inquire.
You're in the AR.
Right.
Right? You got 9 acres.
Right.
You want to go have 10 chickens. Why can't you have 10 chickens? Because this says you can't.
Right.
We're fortunate to have our county attorney here. Stephen, I'd love to hear you weigh in on this one. You got to come to the microphone if you're going to. But I'd love to hear your thoughts, just because everything else we've talked about, Charlie, makes sense to me. I see how people could work with it if they wanted to. This one I struggle with simply because I've used Story County. Outside of our municipalities, I've used Story County as an agricultural community.
I think you're going to run into some real problems. I mean, I have neighbors that have great numbers of chickens, some of them in, well, different configurations and ranging. I don't know that you'd call them commercial. I think that they have signs out. I had a neighbor move into an acreage just on my way home, and it was just a matter of a day or two till I saw a sign for chickens, chicken eggs, poultry, and duck, goose eggs too. I don't know what he's moving at, and he's got maybe 5 or 6 head of cattle there as well. This is going to be it's going to be very, very difficult. And I'm wondering what the Farm Bureau is going to do here. They get wind of this. I think a lot more thought needs to go into how this is going to be carved out.
And real quick, I just want to add one thing because maybe there's some confusion on this. This is only regulating our residential districts, so our R1, our R2, and our AR. A1 district, which is approximately 92% of the unincorporated area, is not touched by this. So your traditional farmstead still going to be allowing livestock in a normal way. This is just mainly focusing on our residential, mainly our subdivision areas. You know, you got Squaw Valley, Bella Woods, Cameron Estates that's going in right now, stuff like that.
Right, but Paul's not in a subdivision. And so I'll go over and I'll say, okay, let's do North Dakota. North Dakota at the railroad tracks, right? So on the south side of the railroad tracks, you're in the city of Ames. On the north side, you're in the county, but I think you're still in AR.
It's R1, I believe.
Okay, yeah. But you're still in one of these. So theoretically, we would be putting something in. Ames is silent on it. So if I own a piece of property on the south side of the railroad tracks in Ames, I can now do more with chickens than I could on the north side of the railroad tracks in the outside the city of Ames in the county. I've never owned a chicken. I'm never going to own a chicken. I mean, outside of what's sitting on the dinner table. But to me, this doesn't sound like what I believe Story County is supposed to be, and it's the reason I'm struggling, and I just need help getting through it.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point. And once I give it a little bit more thought, not that I'm going to raise chickens, but you know, if somebody's in my situation, and I can think of several of these that we've seen over the last 5 years, and somebody does want to raise chickens, with this we're going to prohibit that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I would feel differently if we didn't have a mechanism already to take care of a problem. But I think if there's a problem, we have a mechanism now to dig in and deal with this. And, Charlie, you just help me. If I'm missing something big here, just help me through it.
No, and I will add, this was put together because of the inquiries that we get. You know, if we want to start looking at it and if we want to start adopting some different policy, that's perfectly okay with me. Don't get held up on what I'm proposing here, what the commission's proposing. If we want to adopt some formal policy that says, yes, we do allow for these, but you need to talk to animal control to find out exactly what the limits may be. And I know our animal control ordinance, I've looked through it, and it's somewhat broad. I think there's a lot of discretion in that ordinance that comes from the animal control officer.
Yep.
I'm okay with that. That's fine. We can look into this a little bit further if you'd like to and bring it back at another date.
And so that I'm clear, the impetus behind this coming is more about the inquiries. It's not because we've been having big problems. You mentioned we had the one rooster.
Yes, and animal control took care of that one right away.
Dealt with that one. So this isn't that we've got this plethora of problems that we're dealing with. It's that we've had a bunch of inquiries.
Yeah, we just want something in our ordinance that states what we do and do not allow, or at least come up with some sort of policy on how we answer these questions, because we've right now been somewhat inconsistent on it, I think.
Okay.
And, again, I will bring up the whole agricultural exemption issue in county, and I think if this was ever challenged on that, too, we could be not necessarily in a problem, but, you know, people could say, again, this is an agricultural use. I don't have to listen to county zoning. So, again, it was just some sort of guidance for us and mm-hmm. the public to read. So,
which one is that one?
This one?
Yeah, that is.
On the summary of recommendations you're talking?
Yeah.
What number?
Number 4.
Okay.
Yeah, number 4, I believe, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Non-commercial poultry.
Well, I'll move on real quick to the other ones. The unpermitted structures, we technically right now do not have anything on unpermitted structures. I've talked to a few counties. They do actually, at a point, you know, limit to what is permitted, what's not permitted. Right now, again, if you put up a children's playhouse that's 20 square feet in size, technically it needs a permit by our code. So looking in that, we're trying to figure out a way to kind of alleviate some of our staff time and inspections and looking through the permitting process. We came up with some language that says accessory structures which are less than 100 square feet and have no permanent attachment to the underlying ground shall not require a zoning permit. However, all bulk requirements of the applicable zoning districts shall still be satisfied. That would be height and setbacks.
Okay.
So, again, we wouldn't do the inspections. We wouldn't have a formal permitting, but it would kind of be the onus on the property owners to still meet the setback requirements. If we got a complaint from a neighboring property owner, we'd go out there and look at that and make sure that we could.
So now, if we pass this, Paul could go build a 10-by-10 playground without getting permit. I'm sure you would have done that.
And it would have to be under.
There you go. Yeah. That's right.
It'd have to be 10 by 9.
Yeah.
It'd have to be 10 by 9 just because we said under 100 square feet, so 10 by 10.
10 by 9 feet, 11 inches.
Exactly. So be careful. Yes.
Right.
So, again, the summary of all the recommendations that we listed in the memo that I sent to you are here. If there's any additional questions on them, I'd be happy to answer them. Hopefully it's pretty straightforward.
Okay. Well, before we get into a motion, I would like to, at a minimum, pull out the chicken, any chicken language for further discussion, or just send it back for them to talk about some more. Everything else, nothing else really concerned me in these. They made sense to me.
Correct. I agree with that.
You still have to open the public forum.
But it's a public hearing.
Yep, absolutely. I just want to make sure that we had clear where we were going. All right. With that, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody who would like to address Ordinance 236. Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board.
I would move approval of the changes minus the chicken language, so to speak. And I think if we send that back to the commission for a little bit further study and comment, I think we can live with the other one. So, move approval with removal of number 4.
And that's first consideration.
On first consideration, set the second consideration for next Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015.
And I'll second that. Further discussion. Charlie, we clear on what we're trying to have done here?
Yes, and I will get everything updated. I'll also kind of work with Sue a little bit just to make sure that we're all on the same page between her department as well.
Okay. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. First consideration of 236 as amended passes with second reading to occur on March 3rd. And, Charlie, if we may, when you come back on March 3rd, please bring kind of the amended language that we passed here today.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much. Additional items, discussion and consideration of salary for vacant assistant Story County attorney position. Stephen and Teresa. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
We are also considering a new hire in the county attorney's office of Tyler Grimm as part of this conversation.
That is correct. The position that we are hiring Tyler Grimm for is the reorganization of our office in removing victim witness coordinators and having a trial coordinating attorney. The position that he's replacing was a $49,000 wage position. He would request that we at least have this position paid $54,999.88. That is also the lowest paid attorney position in our office, so it seems reasonable to us.
And now help me with this. I know we had the conversation, Stephen, when you talked about, and I think rightly talked about, restructuring kind of how you handle that victim witness. I know you got beat up for it a little bit having the conversation, but it made sense to me that it would become an attorney position. And it makes perfect sense to me that if we're going to hire an attorney, it's going to cost us a little more than hiring a non-attorney. So just talk me through kind of how we ended up where we are today, because I feel like this is something that either we knew or the three of us should have had some idea that it was going to cost a little more to get an attorney, but clearly we didn't build it into the approved position.
Well, you can't think of everything, but as Teresa's pointed out, if you're actually hiring an attorney, there is that dynamic in the office. The attorney has to be, I think, in the attorney's group. And I think the wage that is paid at the lowest level is, I think, key in doing that. The other thing about how we're getting here is the fact that there's been a change over the number of years that I've been in the office concerning the attitude taken by defense counsel with respect to the information and the role that victim witness played. And not to drag it out, I've said these things to you before, but to the extent that it's extremely important that the person in charge of that position understands the rules of criminal procedure and understands the relationships that have to be taken with respect to a witness, because as the county attorney, we don't have clients. Everybody becomes a witness. That's a victim of a crime. That's a police officer. That's a civilian who happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. They're all witnesses for the state. And then the communications between them and our office are not confidential to the extent that a private attorney's client's conversations are confidential with that attorney. And so over the years, we've become under more and more scrutiny about things that are said, because in some types of cases, witnesses fluctuate in terms of how they are going to cooperate, and they go back to the other side and they say, well, I told the county attorney this, and then the county attorney's office is accused of not coming forward. We're placed in an awkward position of having to have our staff in the position of becoming a witness in a proceeding. We don't want that. We want this to be as it was always intended to be. And so having an attorney in this position and having the experience of their education and understanding the rules of criminal procedure is key. And I think that the starting salary in my office is appropriate.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, so as I see it, in essence, it's $6,000, almost $6,000 that we're talking about adding. Teresa, talk to me about where you are in the budget for this fiscal year. So you'd need to get through the next, 4 months. Do you have the dollars available to be able to get through the next 4 months?
I don't think there's any question for that, because we've been without the victim witness coordinator for a few months now.
So what we're really talking about is, for the FY16 budget, we need to bump that salary line item by $6,000 if we approve this.
That would be correct. Yeah.
Yep. Paul, questions?
I just want to say that I appreciate the work that Stevens and his staff have done on this. I think he's doing exactly what he's elected to do, is run the county attorney's office as efficiently as he can. And I know that he took some heat over all this recently, but Stevens elected to do the job that he's doing, and if he deems that this is what's necessary for the efficient running of his office, then that's, I'm going to support that, because he's the county attorney. So thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
So I need to make a motion then, don't I?
I think we're going to do this in two motions, okay, Paul. So the first one would be consideration of the salary for the vacant Story County attorney position. And if you would set that as an up to $55,000 for FY16, I think that would give them what they need.
Okay. I'll make that motion that we approve the salary up to $55,000 for the new hire in the county attorney's office.
And I'll second it. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Now the second one is going back to our personnel actions, and that is the new hire of Tyler Grimm into this position that we just approved.
I would approve or make a motion to approve the new hire of Tyler Grimm in the county attorney's office for the amount stated, $2,115.38 biweekly.
And I'll second it. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Both of those pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Next is discussion and consideration of promotional signage for county-funded projects. Leanne Harder. Hi, Leanne.
good.
You're taking us back to talk about chickens again? Okay.
Here's what it actually looks like.
Did
you see that's it?
Okay.
There you go.
The delay.
That's all right.
Leanne Harder, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager for Story County. What I'm here to do today is to talk to you about potential signage for those projects that are funded through the Story County, funded wholly or in part by the Story County Board of Supervisors through several different programs we have. I'm bringing this forward. This is identifying the communications plan. It was last year and then carried forth to this year as well. What you see there on the screen and was attached to the board's agenda was what I hope is a very simple signage or sign that businesses and cities could display as part of this to be able to demonstrate that the board has and Story County has been a partner in the funding stream. Not meant to be anything complicated in signage, just simply to get the message across. It would be in for two different types of projects that we have on the books right now, and then as future projects are added or are taken away, then we would discuss it. But definitely the facade grant program and then the urban renewal area projects, which we've done for two consecutive years now. I was trying to figure out the most effective way to have this, to make it easy for the entity that received the funds to display this. If you put just a piece of paper, it's going to get weathered and yellowed and very faded, could get damaged by wind, rain, whatever that may be. If you use a harder plastic, like we used to use for notice of violations or years ago, the almost a foam core but in plastic, that's going to be cumbersome. So I came down to static clings or adhesive decals, and working with Alpha Copies did get some estimates. Just summary, the static cling, that just as it says, is inside the window, so not exposed to elements, and then the adhesive decal would be outside. Either would work because these are probably going to be construction zones where there will be some dust. The adhesive decal actually sticks, so they'd have to use something to remove it at the end. You both are familiar with what static cling is. I mean, it's on bumper stickers and you name it. The price differential between the two for the 50 quantity is about $14. I would prefer the static cling as opposed to adhesive decal so that we're not having someone have to use Gooby Gone or whatever to remove something. So it's about $326, non-budgeted item, but again, something in the communications plan that we've had for the past couple of years. So first of all, do you like the layout? Is this a purchase that you want to go forward with? Are my main questions.
For me, yes, yes, and no. Yes, I like the layout. Yes, I want to go ahead with the purchase. No, I don't have any questions.
The only comment I would make is that are they maybe a little big because they're the same size as this?
Yeah, they are 8.5 by 11 in size.
Somebody, if you know, somebody redoes the facade grant or, you know, takes advantage of the facade grant, you know, we're asking them to stick this size decal in the front window of their.
For how long?
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I'm assuming there's no requirement that they display this.
Actually, in the facade grant program, on the application, they do acknowledge that they will place signage. I think we even talked about adding it with the – it might be in the project specifics for the urban renewal area now, too. The idea would be throughout construction.
Yeah.
And maybe once they do a ribbon cutting, and then they remove it. Right. 8.5 by 11, I chose that, and if you see the design being very simple, so it could be viewable from the street, too. If you're driving slowly down Main Street, zeroing, you could see it.
All right. And it's going to be green around the edges instead of the blue. Is that correct?
Well, actually, it's blue around the edges. The lettering is green.
Okay.
But for some reason, when I PDF'd it, it went to gray.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out.
All right. Okay, I can live with that. I would. Do we need a motion on this?
Yeah, this is a consideration.
Okay. I would move approval of the promotional signage as presented, and you want to use the static ones instead of the permanent?
I think that would be better for them to have to remove it and easier for the.
And how many? 50.
Probably the 50.
I don't think we're not racing. 50 will get us over the next few years, definitely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll second it. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Promotional signage, 50 of them, passes as an unbudgeted item. Okay. Next is acknowledge receipt of additional proposals for the C2C project.
Yeah, I dropped the ball when I put the I'm being honest out there. When I put the RFP together in the time frame, I totally forgot that we had President's Day on that Monday before the RFPs were due. That being said, a consultant that's looking at putting together a proposal should look at the calendar, too, and realize that, hey, this entity might be closed. Let's build that in. But we did have two FedEx tracking sheets for two other business firms that submitted proposals for the C2C RFP. Should throw a couple more acronyms in there, that they attempted delivery Monday either morning or early afternoon. So I'm recommending that you accept Place Dynamics LLC and WSB and Associates as two additional.
They did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
Yeah.
I would move approval that we accept those two.
For full RFPs. Consideration with the others.
Yes.
And I'll second it.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Acknowledged.
Thank you very much.
No other reports, liaison assignments, and committee meeting updates. Paul.
Pass.
I met with, along with Jessica Reynolds and Alyssa Wignall, met with CLP staff yesterday and had a very frank and open discussion about, as we're winding things down at CLP, really, really excited about Optima and what they're doing, coming in and taking over those programs. And it's not, I said yesterday, it was the first time that I've had a meeting with our CLP staff that we've had more answers than questions, and that's a good spot to be in. So I just wanted to update you on that. That's all I had. Public forum 2, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. We may not take any action due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, announcements from the supervisors.
Pass.
Pass.
Move adjournment.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.